Here we go.
Blog Talk Radio.
Here comes the sound.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up a bird, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Gain new knowledge, get a fresh new start. They never will bring you there. So let's talk about it. Well, I and on the air.
This is MJ Network, and I am your host, Fran Lewis, and I am totally pumped and excited because Jessica Fletcher is back, and she's moved into the 21st century finally. Yay! And none other than one of my favorite people in the universe, John Land, is here to talk about his new novel, Manuscript for Murder. And I have to tell you, there's like 20 people that want my copy of it. They're not getting it.
No, they're not allowed.
They're not allowed. They can't. Yeah, I know. And I've got like a million people like, can I have the book next? No, you can't because it's mine. So how are you? How you doing?
I'm good, Fran. It's always great to talk to you. When I talk to you, I know I have a new book out. It doesn't become real until we have our interview. Then I know it's for real.
This is for real, and I put you 5 stars on Amazon this morning.
Oh, and that was you. So that balances off that those 35 one-star reviews. And I think I'm the only author ever on Amazon who gets his no-star review. No, I'm just kidding. No, the response to the book has been...
You had one 5-star, one I don't want to tell you, and then mine.
Well, the one that the negative review that's up there is about the audiobook, and the person is criticizing the narrator.
Yeah.
So they gave the book a bad review because they didn't like the narrator. Someday we should do a show. You should do a show.
Yeah,
I should do it. About about the power, what Yelp and Google and Amazon, started with Amazon, people live in fear. Business people who work every day of their lives live in fear of people giving them a bad review. And no one knows if it's legitimate. No one knows if it's not the laundromat down the street who's criticizing your laundromat because they want more business. But the thing I really liked about what you said in your intro that I really take to heart and take great pride in is what you said about Jessica has entered the 21st century. Because more than anything else, what I've settled on, this is the second book I've done in the series, and now I've completed a third one called Murder in Red. I'm about to start my fourth effort, which will be the 50th in the series overall, and let's talk about that at the end of the show. But what I've settled on is that I'm writing these books the way they would have been written and the stories the way they would have been written if the television series and the book series were conceived today, not in 1985. This is a hugely different society. Consider what 1985, 1986, even a little before, I forgot the exact year the show went on the air. Think about, there was no internet back then. Cable was just coming into fold. Reagan was president, and politicians, Democrats and Republicans, actually talked to each other. This is a paradigm shift. I don't know if there's ever been a period in American history where so much has changed, evolved, degenerated, or improved, whatever, however you want to put it, in these past 30 years. So to think that Jessica Fletcher should be written the same way today as she was written in 1985 is really disingenuous to the reader and disingenuous to the story. So I've really I've thought a lot about what it is I'm trying to do. And I write organically. I don't sit down and decide what I'm going to do with a series like Murder, She Wrote. I was lucky enough to inherit it, to take it over from the great Don Bain when he became ill. But I didn't go into it with a lot of forethought. The forethought became afterthought. And I finally have settled on that. So that's why what you said about Jessica coming into the 21st century means so much to me.
Well, I'll tell you something. I love her now. I really do love her. And she's great. But you know what? You're right. If she was still back in the 19th century or whatever, 20th century, it would be like, why am I reading this? She keeps doing the same thing over and over again. So, by the way, you mentioned Yelp, Google, and Amazon. This girl reviews for Amazon, but reviews for Amazon. I review for Google, but Yelp loves me. They absolutely love me. And I have to say, I get an email from them. It's scary. Every single month, just this month alone, for some reason, in the last 90 days, over exactly 6,120 people read my reviews. I have no clue why, but I never write anything negative, so that makes me feel better. And you know, it's funny, when I went into a restaurant last week, I said, if you're not nice to me, I'm going to write something rotten about you on Yelp. I got great service.
And I'll bet you got great service, because it's interesting,
yeah,
in the sense that power has shifted.
Yeah.
And I have no idea how to even quantify that, in the sense that professional reviewers, and I don't know, I think you might be able to trace this, and this is true of the book business, to the collapse of print media, where reviews used to be common. If you look at the very, very few of the remaining local newspapers still have book pages, still have pages that review local restaurants. So there was a void created by the loss of print media, the loss of the traditional newspaper. When I grew up, everybody got the newspaper every day, and everybody read the newspaper every day. 90% of the people in the state of Rhode Island were getting the Providence Journal or the Providence Evening Bulletin when I was a kid. Now, that number, I don't know what the number is, but it's a fraction of that. And this is, again, what we're talking about when we talk about Jessica today versus 30 years ago, more than 30 years ago. We're living in a different world. This world has advanced geometrically. Part of the fun of writing fiction is showing how your characters deal with evolution and change around them. I have so much fun in the Murder, She Wrote series, and this is something I've done that I don't know. I think is a big positive. Jessica lives in the bucolic town of Cabot Cove, which is like a little known paradise on the coast of Maine, a former fishing village. The thing is, though, if you look at villages like that, that's the way Kennebunkport was. That's the way Agunkwit was at one point. It's not realistic to think that real estate developers, and this was actually touched upon a little bit in the TV show, that real estate developers would not have discovered Cabot Cove. And sure enough, one of the things Jessica has to deal with, in my take on the series, is the fact that Cabot Cove is becoming the, quote, Hamptons of the North. That's not an exact accurate depiction. It's just how the locals bemoan what's happened to their town. And I think if you just let your characters evolve in a vacuum, and this is where I differ from the traditional definition of the cozy, from what I've been able to glean, is that nothing ever changes, that everything is always the same from book to book, and there's no evolution in setting, in conflict, in the problems the characters are, the challenges the characters are facing. I can't write like that. To me, how a character like Jessica Fletcher interacts with her environment is a crucial element to the evolution of the story. In Manuscript for Murder, she has to deal with the fact that her publisher may be swindling her. She has to deal with the fact that he's murdered or commits suicide. She has to find out. In Murder in Red, she deals with a sinister hospital. That's my next one. A sinister hospital that set up shop just outside of Cabot Cove
and is in league
with a sinister pharmaceutical company.
Oh, cool.
You define heroes by the bad guys they confront and the good they do for the people around them. I think these books are still very much cozies. They're still very much familiar. But that doesn't mean within the body of the cozy, Jessica can't encounter challenges and conflict that may not have been there in past installments, you know, of the series. More in the books, I think. I don't know if the TV series was actually a cozy. I don't know when the term cozy was actually invented. I think the TV show was just a terrific show, and when it came on the air, it was probably ahead of its time. A strong woman character in the 80s was way beyond the norm, way beyond the pale. Jessica is a creature, and this is why I've really enjoyed, right, one of the reasons why, and I always say things to you I never say to anybody else. I kind of think that Jessica, as a single older woman who is extremely successful on her own, and gives a tremendous amount back to her friends and those and her community, she would seem to me to be the archetype of the strong woman today. Now, of course, I've also written, mm-hmm. as you've covered, a female Texas Ranger who's significantly younger than Jessica.
Mm.
And yet, Caitlin Strong, my female Texas Rangers, has far more in common with Jessica Fletcher mm-hmm. than there are differences between them. Jessica does not fire a gun. I don't think she knows how to shoot a gun. Caitlin is obviously an expert marksman and is a gunfighter. But the way they go about their lives in pursuit of justice, in pursuit of what's good, of standing up for what's right, of believing in their values above all else. They're very similar characters, and I think they're both archetypes for the modern-day progressive woman.
Mm. I agree with you, besides the fact that Caitlin and Fran are so alike, it's scary. And as far as I get criticized a lot, because if I want to know something and I want justice to be done and I'm not going to stop until I find out the answer, that's the Jessica Fletcher in me. And, yeah. I think I like this. I love the show, but this series is more me. So we know that the publisher, this poor man, is dead, and now she has to really have a problem because who's going to take care of publish her books? But one thing I found interesting is that explain digital publishing and how Amazon Unlimited works and how authors get royalties. You know, my last book came out, and I got a whole bunch of good reviews, and I was honored the other day that I bumped into somebody on the street, one of my medical doctors I haven't seen in years, and he told me he bought the book and he read it. He read A Daughter's Promise. I go, yay, somebody read it, yes. And the guy in the beauty parlor, his daughter is reading it now too. But I'm finding that not everybody gets royalties from everything. Amazon sends me royalties every month, whatever. Two of my publishers do, and one I've asked many times, and I said, I know that people are buying the book, so how do you get cheated on royalties? Seriously, because I know that happens to a lot of people.
Well, again, we're about to highlight something else that makes 1984, 85, when the show came on the air, so mm-hmm. different than today, and why Jessica has to be, I believe, not modernized. She's the same person, just brought into the 21st
yeah.
century, as you said.
Yeah.
Kindle Unlimited, the way it works is this. If you pay a certain amount, I'm not sure, I think it might be $9.95 a month, and for that $9.95, a la Netflix, you can download as many Kindle books that are eligible, not every Kindle book, but the ones that are deemed mm-hmm. eligible by their publishers and authors for Kindle Unlimited. How does an author get paid when their book is basically distributed for free? Well,
mm-hmm.
Amazon pays based on the number of pages that are read. So if someone just downloads it for free because it's there but never opens it, you get nothing. If they finish the whole book, you get close, if not your entire – this is not known publicly, so I'm guessing. I think you get just about your full quote, whatever the usual amount Amazon would pay you. Otherwise, you get a prorated portion of that same number, and it could be half the cover price. It could be three-quarters of the cover price. Now, of course, the cover price of a lot of these books is only $2.99 or $4.99, so you're being paid on a lower scale anyway. It could be even 99 cents. So What's scary to me about that, it isn't so much I mind being paid by the page, because I always call myself a page-turning author, so let me put my money where my mouth is, right? What's a little concerning is Amazon knows not only the books that you bought, but how much you read of them.
I know.
And it's kind of like Big Brother. And again, I want to come back to think that these books could be written today the same way they were written in when Don Bain started the series, even in the late 1990s. These things didn't exist. These concerns didn't exist. Writers, I don't think writers have an obligation to keep up with current trends. That's not, writers can do whatever they want. But the backdrop of the world that your characters are interacting must be genuine. The characters must be facing problems that the reader can relate to. And this is the fun of writing a series like Murder, She Wrote. I mean, this is the fun of how does someone like Jessica – now, Jessica is Jessica. There's not a lot of alteration in her character. When I say she evolves, and this is what's crucial. Jessica doesn't change, Fran. The change in Jessica is as a result of how she reacts to her environment. And that's what you are getting to, and I'm going to keep coming back to this for the whole hour. What you said about bringing her into the 21st century, that's what it's all about. She is reacting more to the stimulus that is around her. So when there is a review, a terrific review in BookTrib, which is a wonderful site, ran yesterday, where the reviewer called Manuscript for Murder a cozy thriller instead of a cozy mystery. And I think some of the things I just illuminated explain why maybe this is a new genre. It has all the elements that people have always loved about the series, but those elements are wrapped up in a different kind of bow. They're wrapped up maybe a little tighter, maybe with more color, more story, in other words. And that's the difference. I think it's interesting to me how many people, and there have been so many reviews that are now out from bloggers, which is the new, in addition to reviews, bloggers are the new gold standard. It used to be Amazon reviews, and now it's book bloggers, which I love. I have so much respect for book bloggers because they read these, they get these books for free. They're not getting paid for these reviews. They do it because they love it. But the consensus that has emerged is that so many of these bloggers have never read a Murder, She Wrote book before, but they know the series. And they're saying, you know, so this is their Manuscript for Murder, or A Date with Murder, but I think more of them have read Manuscript for Murder, my second effort, not my first. It's how they're responding to a character they know only peripherally. So in that sense, what my goal is to make both the new readers to the book series and the old readers to both the TV series and the book series enjoy what I'm doing equally. Can I do that? I don't know, but that's what I'm trying to do.
Well, you're definitely doing it because, ladies and gentlemen, Fran doesn't get paid to do anything, ever. She doesn't get paid to do anything. So, Red misses the breakfast between Jessica, between breakfast meeting, and what does Jessica learn? And then she decides, because we love her, to get involved in the investigation to tell us about her meeting with her publisher. So, well, he gives her this manuscript, and what is this manuscript that was supposed to be published, and who wrote it? And then she gets roped into it, but then it wouldn't be Jessica if she just sat back and did nothing, right?
You know, I had a lot of fun, and I'm inspired by things. When I took over the series, I have worked regularly with Don Bain. He was the original writer of the series. He wrote 46 books in the series. There are very few mystery series only Perry Mason of all the real established series ever.
Him.
You know, Earl Stanley Garner. There were only 28 Hercule Poirot's. I could go. There were only 21 Sherlock Holmes's. So there weren't that many. And Don Bain wrote 46. I work with Don's grandson. And in our initial conversations, we just started talking about things we enjoyed. And both of us really liked the movie The Ghostwriter, the Roman Polanski film about a writer who dies in the middle of a manuscript and the ghostwriter who's brought in to finish it. And it's a biography of a politician. So the idea that he was murdered because of what he was writing always stuck in my head. Just as The Name of the Rose, the great book by Umberto Eco, about a book that literally kills.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it kills because there's poison in the ink. That's how in The Name of the Rose, that's how the book kills. In Manuscript for Murder, it's not literally a manuscript that kills. What happened? It's basically with the backdrop of publishing. You have this book called The Affair, which Jessica's publisher, Lane Barfield, who is desperately struggling to maintain control and over his own imprint, which is very rare in this day and age to control your own imprint, finds a manuscript, this book that comes in unsolicited, that he feels can make – it's the next Da Vinci Code. It's going to put him at the top of the heap. It's going to make him relevant again. In his mind, in the publishing business. The problem is, as we find out, is everyone who reads the manuscript is murdered. Now, Jessica, and here's where it becomes not a cozy mystery, but a cozy thriller. Jessica is now trying to find out, what is it about the manuscript that is leading everyone who reads it to die? But here's the twist. She's reading it. So not only is she trying to solve a mystery about why five other people have been murdered. She has to find that out or she will be the next victim. And in fact, she almost does become the next victim in the story. So there's another this is a pure mystery in many, many respects. What I think could qualify it as a thriller is the fact that the hero's life is endangered by her actions, which is more of a thriller than a mystery. It's not just an investigation. There's a race. There's suspense. There are cliffhangers. So that's really what we're facing. That's the MacGuffin, this book, this unpublished manuscript that there's no record of at the publisher. Sales doesn't know about it. Nobody knows about it. That's the MacGuffin. Why is everyone dying who reads this manuscript?
As I was reading the book, I'm saying, why am I reading Manuscript for Murder? I said, because I really don't want to be next on the list of the killers, to be honest. So I just sort of, read the book with the title covered so they wouldn't know I was reading it. No, serious.
Yeah.
Because after all, we need me to read more.
Life imitating art.
Yeah, I know. I have so many books that I read. What can I tell you? So she goes to the crime scenes, and what does she learn? Who is AJ Falcone and who is Alicia Bond, and how do they link to the manuscript? People, when you read the book, just make sure you do it in a safe place. Keep your doors locked and don't tell anybody you're reading it because it's really fantastic, but Jessica doesn't want you to get hurt. No, I'm serious. No.
It's interesting. Two things to answer that question. One, Alicia Bond and A.J. Falcone are fellow best-selling authors and this gets into the backdrop of publishing. I think that the great thing about The Murder, She Wrote, the TV series, and the books that Don Bain did, many of them, had backdrops about things that Jessica would enter a new kind of world, and the mystery would revolve around that world. In this case, that's publishing. And one thing we learn about this in this book about publishing is something that's very important in this industry is still blurbs. If you're trying to convince people that you have a big book that you want bookstores to put in the front of their store steeply discounted, you want to get blurbs, endorsements, quotes from other best-selling authors to validate and affirm what you believe about it. So these two author, these two other best-selling authors are sent the manuscript so they can offer blurbs. They're both authors that have been that are being or were previously published by Jessica's publisher, whose name is Lane Barfield. Well, of course, what did I say before? When you read the book, you get killed, and no one knows why. The challenge of this, and this is what, this is why I love talking to you, because again, you bring out stuff that I never talk about with anyone else. Of course, this is my first interview for this book, so I didn't have the chance. I take it back. I did a tape one last week, so this is the second. But here was the challenge I faced that I didn't know I was facing until I was into the book. Everything revolves around this manuscript. This manuscript that the publisher is so obsessed with and thinks is the next Da Vinci Code. So the challenge I had, Fran, was I had to create the next Da Vinci Code within the book I was actually writing. Mm-hmm. I was writing Manuscript for Murder, a Jessica Fletcher book with Jessica Fletcher. But I had to include enough excerpts that Jessica is reading of the affair, which is the book within the book, so that the reader would be in her shoes. The reader would be able to play along. And if I failed, if the affair was not as commercially – it did not have the commercial potential that I was selling, then the entire concept would fail. So the book within the book – and this was such a fine line to walk, and you interview a lot of writers – but this was a challenge. You interview more writers than I think any other interviewer in the world, really. But imagine a challenge where I wasn't writing one book. I was writing two books, and I had to include just enough of the book within the book through Jessica's POV. It's not just stuck there for you to read. You're reading as Jessica's reading, because the key thing with a mystery or a thriller, playing along with the hero, trying to see if you can solve the crime and guess what's going on. This is not a spoiler alert, so don't turn your volume down. You don't have to. People who are listening, one of the mysteries in this book, of course, is the author it's a pseudonym. So, how do we find out who is the real author of the book? That's part of the mystery, and that's what you're trying to figure out with Jessica. Now, who helps Jessica figure that out? This is, again, the fun I have with the series. Harry McGraw, the private eye played by Jerry Orbach in the TV series, who went on to do The Law and Harry McGraw for 12 episodes and then
I
went
love
on
him.
To Law. He went on, you know, he passed away a few years ago, and he was so brilliant on Law and Order for all those years. But Harry, and I have to tell you, the fun, I love writing. You know that. I love the process of writing. I don't just like having written as I hate writing, but love having written as Gertrude Stein, I think it was, who said, might have been Dorothy Sayers. But I love the process. I love the evolution. I love surprising myself, because if I don't know what's going to happen next in Manuscript for Murder, neither can you. So you're playing along with me that way. But I didn't know a lot of this when I started the book. And the challenge of figuring out all the connections, but I love the dialogue. The dialogue between Jessica and Harry McGraw. Those are my favorite scenes to write. I don't know where it comes from. I love the scenes with Mort Metzger.
I love him. Oh, he's great.
He's great. And you know, and he was played by Ron Massick in the TV series after Tom Bosley, who played Amos Tupper, left the show to do a spinoff. So, I mean, that was the great thing about Murder, She Wrote. So many of those actors went on to do more things after that. It was like a factory for young actors to want to be in. But I have so much fun. Now, one of the things, to give you an example of what I'm doing different. In 1985, people were far more formal even then than they are now. And for sheriff, it was always Mrs. Fletcher, Mrs. Fletcher. You know, Mort always called her Mrs. F, or Mrs. Fletcher. I just couldn't do that. Because it made no sense to me that two people who had known each other as long as they had, who had been through so much, would still not be on a first-name basis. And Jessica calls him Mort, and he would call her Mrs. Fletcher. I think it works in the TV series, especially with Tom Bosley, the formality. Yeah. There's a respect. But it almost also indicates to me people are paying respect to Jessica because she's older. Mm-hmm. But you know what? 60 is the new 40. 60-year-olds today are not the way 60-year-olds were in 1985. People were thinking of retirement. In 1985, you were thinking toward retirement. In 2018, you're thinking about working another 20 years for many people when you're 60. So to me, Jessica needs to call Mort. And in Murder in Red, I cover – it becomes a running joke between them that – why, you know, when he's angry at her or gets or just is shaking his head, he says, Mrs. Fletcher, you know, it's kind of like I'm almost making fun of myself for the change that I've made that I've been criticized for. Because there are aficionados and devotees of the series who this is everyone has their own opinion, who feel that I'm not being loyal to the tradition by changing something like that. But again, it goes to where you did what you said in your intro, Jessica, into the 21st century.
Well, you just said something that I'm glad you said. The one thing I can't stand is when somebody says to you what your date of birth. I usually forget that on a daily basis, and then you tell them seriously. They'll say to you, you walk into the phone company. What's your date of birth? What do I need to know that for? I want a new phone. And then you tell them, I make up a number. Oh, my God, do you understand what I'm saying? I go, no, I left my brain home and I left my teeth in my jar. Seriously, I can't stand age discrimination. And I'm smarter now than I ever was. Everybody tells me that. I said, yeah, okay, whatever you think. And I don't tell anybody how old I am because it's none of their business. And I certainly don't look old, so I don't care. I'm with my, you know, red, green, blue, and purple, and orange streaks. What the heck? You know, who cares? But, yeah, Jessica may be older, but sometimes I get annoyed when people treat people differently because they're old. Everybody should be the same. So we've got Jessica going home. She and Mort, I love Mort, learn the fate of Falcone and Bond. But reading the manuscript, we meet Abby and a man calling himself Pace who reveals something. So what does he reveal, and what could be ripped out of the headlines as Abby explains, why did she run away from the White House?
That's
a good character. She's a good character, but I like Mort Metzger. I really think that he learned how to use a computer properly this time. That's even better.
Well, and you know, this is, again, I don't outline, so... When you're writing a political thriller, I didn't write a political thriller. The book within Manuscript for Murder, The Affair, is a political thriller, the book within the book.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's about the president's daughter being marked for death, for assassination, mm-hmm. and she goes on the run and is helped. We're discussing a book that doesn't exist. It's only like, you know, excerpted. Yeah, it's fun to talk, you know. So you have this story of the president's daughter being rescued by this escaped young assassin who's part of a sinister organization, and he's escaped them, and now they're both on the run. And to help her, they have to break into the White House. And I said, you know what? At that point, as I was creating fiction, I kind of knew that I had to bring the action in the end into Washington. Jessica, this book... Books evolve organically. Round pegs go into round holes. Square pegs go into square holes. This book needed to end at the White House. This book needed to end on that kind of note. So what did I do at that point? I went back and established a relationship between Jessica Fletcher and the First Lady of the United States. And it's very credible because... Mm-hmm. Jessica was spearheading a campaign for literacy with other authors. That is the pet cause of the First Lady, so they become friends. There are ample examples of stuff like this happening. So when Jessica needs help getting not just into the White House, but a meeting with the president himself as we get near the end of Manuscript for Murder, she calls the First Lady. So I kind of think, you know, some readers might think that that's pushing the envelope. I actually think that's very much Jessica Fletcher. Jessica, as relentless as she is, as polite and reverent and respectful as she is, she's capable of handling herself in any situation. But it just felt like, and here again, the great Fran Lewis brings stuff out of me I haven't told anybody yet. It's almost like, and this is, maybe this is what I love so much about this book without realizing it. The actual book, Manuscript for Murder, which you can buy, hopefully will, or at least read, and the book within the book, The Affair, which you can't buy, which doesn't exist. It's almost like they merge. It's almost like the reason I think, part of the reason why people are responding so positively to this book is there's this melding of the book, of the political thriller that she's reading and the world that and the mystery that she's investigating. So by the end of the book, she has entered the world of The Affair. Because I don't want to, no spoiler alerts of who the author of The Affair turns out to be. But that's what makes it a mystery as much as a thriller. It's not just what someone is trying to do. It's who is trying to do it. In Caitlin Strong books, you know who the villain is. You know the Wizard of Oz. I pull back the curtain early in the Caitlin Strong books and show you the Wizard of Oz. The wizard is back there. You know who the wizard is, and you watch Caitlin try to catch him. That's the format. That's the structure. In my Jessica Fletcher books, the curtain is there, but I don't pull it back. I pull it back a little bit at a time until that final reveal, always in the last chapter where it gets yanked aside. Now, past books in the series and the TV show were famous for that wonderful moment where Jessica will gather everyone together and explain how she figured out which one of them is the killer.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't done that yet. Exactly that way. I prefer in that last moment, that last scene of the book, when she shows up, more like Columbo. And by the way, Columbo was written by the same writers who wrote the early seasons, or maybe or more than the early seasons. William Link, and I think it's Link and Levinson were their two names. So there's a lot of Columbo in Murder, She Wrote. And there's a lot more of Columbo in my take on Murder, She Wrote. And was there ever a better mystery television show on the air than Peter Falk and Columbo? So I almost think that Jessica has a little bit of Columbo in her, in my take.
Well, I have to, I don't want to forget, Monday I'm doing something very different. The book is called In My Mother's Honor. I don't know the author's name. He calls his name. I am waiting. He's a Vietnam vet who's 73 or 74 years old, and he never got his benefits. So I'm going to see if we can bring it out in the open for him. I read the book. Yeah, it was sad. He asked me to read it on Lincoln, and I'm going, okay. And I read it. I go, you deserve to be honored. You deserve to be spotlighted. So he's coming on Monday. But Wednesday, we have something really different, and I actually watched it yesterday. It scared the daylights out of me. The one and only New York Times author Tess Gerrenson. It's not a book. It's not a book, people. It's a movie. It's called Island Zero, a takeoff on Jaws and I would say Agatha Christie's And Then There Was None. It is really scary. It's a marine biologist, and it's what happens when this fishing community, all the livestock and all the fish disappear, and then what happens to the people I feel faint if I don't watch it, but it's fantastic. Oh, my God, is that scary. So she's coming on Wednesday to talk about the movie that I actually watched yesterday, and I made my husband watch it with me because it was really scary. On the 20th, someone you and I both love, Vincent Zandri, Flower Man. On the 26th, a former DEA and SWAT detective, Bo Wagner, Network Exposed. And to end November, on Audie Van Wy 9/11, he's a 9/11 survivor, and he hasn't quite understood it. He can't seem to deal with it. On the 4th of December, what better way to start with somebody you and I both know, Matt Coyle, Wrong Light. I'm doing the book launch that day. Yay! Jeff Bond on the 6th. And then you're coming back on with Alan Topol, Carla Negus, R.G. Belsky, and Marcia Casper-Cook for a panel show on We Won't Tell Them What It's About. On the 17th, we've got Vincent Zandri. And on the 20th, I've never met him. Maybe you did. Every Wicked Man, Stephen James. That's how I'm
Oh, Stephen, you're going to love talking to Stephen James.
Yeah, he's I couldn't believe
he's terrific.
Asked an interview with me. Oh, good. I was excited. Oh, my God. Stephen James, whoa.
And you have to tell Tess Gerritsen I said hello. She's a friend, and she's a wonderful, wonderful writer.
She is wonderful. And when she walked over to me 2 years ago at the Philippines and gave me a hug and knew who I was, I have arrived, people.
So, let me know what it feels like. I can live vicariously through you.
You're right. You know what? My sister died, and she said to me before she died, you haven't arrived until you've met James Patterson, and he's been on your show. I said, I don't think I'm ever going to arrive on that one because I don't think he's ever going to come on my show. I don't think he does interviews. But I just read Target Alice Course People comes out November 19th. Yeah, it was good. Of course, Manuscript for Murder is fantastic, and A Date with Murder. And I just received Daniel Palmer's new Saving Megan. And if you want to read a really great one, Sea of Greed by Clive Gustler and Graham Brown, unbelievable, unbelievable. And the one and only Colin Eggers and Pastor's Law. So Hanukkah's coming, people, start buying books, and Christmas too, and Kwanzaa. So how does a librarian come into play in this particular book? And
well, there is
and how
a...
how does Harry help her? I love Harry.
You know... And this, I know you when you have a lot of, you have writers in your audience and you often mm-hmm. get into the process. The key with mysteries and thrillers, but obviously more mysteries, are clues. Writers are prone to back yourself into a corner or walk into a wall that you can't get
mm-hmm.
through. The difference between the professional and the amateur is the professional knows how to get out of the corner. How to play rope-a-dope and get out of the corner, or where there is no, where you find a wall, build a door. So what basically happens is, Jessica's life is threatened. Her house is burned, you know, is set on
mm-hmm.
fire, and she's tied
yeah.
to a chair. Now she doesn't. I'm telling you right now, it's okay. She gets out. I'm not giving anything away by saying that. But here's the thing. Now I was stuck. I was in a corner. Because where does she go from there? So I said, and this is a bit of a spoiler alert, okay, she spots a tattoo. And okay, so then she looks at, but then I said, you know what? Oh, my God, no. How many times have we seen a tattoo? And then they look
mm-hmm.
it up, and it's someone from this group, you know, and oh, now they go to,
mm-hmm.
it's a cliche. And I might be, you know, I'm a cliche-prone author, all right? I admit it. So I thought, wait a minute. What if it's not a tattoo? What if it's something else? And I did some research. Thank God for Google. And I found this pigmentation issue that isn't common, but it's out there, and and a lot of people do have it, where you have like a dark spot, not rosacea or something. It's not that. It's something like that.
Mm-hmm.
When Jessica, and this is, you know, the old coincidence, which is a staple of the mystery genre and the thriller genre, Jessica notices that the librarian has a spot that resembles what she remembers from the back of her attacker's hand. And so this disease only has a few drugs that can treat it. So that becomes a clue. That, again, is a staple of both the mystery and the thriller genre, but it's a little more the mystery genre. And here's the thing about the difference between writing these books now as opposed to when the series was conceived. Now, every prescription is logged in. If you want to find out who's taking what drug, we were talking earlier about Amazon knows how many pages of the books you buy on Amazon, how many, if you're reading Kindle, they know everything they know when you open it, and they know how many pages you've read in it, and when you put it down, when you turn your computer, they know all that stuff. Well, when you fill a prescription, it's in a system, and it is conceivable that every single prescription for a certain drug, if you really wanted to find out who was filling them, you could. And that's one of the clues. So that's where the librarian comes in, Doris Ann. The little story that very few people know about. The librarian in the television show, and I forgot the actress's name. It was her name. The character's name on the show was Jean O'Neill, and she was in a wheelchair because she had multiple sclerosis. Well, the actress playing her really was in a wheelchair and really did have multiple sclerosis. Angela Lansbury had her written into the show so she could keep her medical benefits after she lost her job on television program. And the reason, the great reason why, many people say, well, what made Murder, She Wrote? Arguably the most, well, I don't think it's arguable. It's the most popular mystery series in the history of television, of American television. There are some BBC shows that you could argue are more popular because of the European audience. But there's no question. What is it? Well, everyone wanted to work with Angela Lansbury. So if you go back to what made The Twilight Zone and Alfred Hitchcock Presents and Route 66, classic TV shows that people still watch today, look at the guest stars. And Murder, She Wrote was like that, except you had people who didn't need to work. First of all, you had an amazing cast once she came on. William Wyndham as Seth Hazlitt. Claude Akins had a recurring role. Parker Stevenson of the Hardy Boys. I mean, Chuck Connors did a couple episodes. Herb Edelman played Artie Gelber, who's in Manuscript for Murder. I mentioned Tom Bosley before. These people wanted to work with Jessica Fletcher. By the way, we want to talk about Book 50 a little bit because, I want to break some news.
Yeah, go ahead.
We have about
10 minutes.
But before we do that, did you know that Angela Lansbury was not the first choice to play Jessica Fletcher? Gene Stapleton, who had played Edith Bunker on All in the Family, was the first choice to play.
She wouldn't have fit.
People ask me, do you picture Angela Lansbury? Of course I do. She's my co-writer. Her face, my face is not on the cover. Her face is the cover of these books.
I picture.
So people say, I got criticized for saying that Jessica is 5'8", almost 5'9". That's how tall Angela Lansbury is. And if you remember the TV show, she towers over many of the actors she's playing with. So playing against in some cases. So it's a great, so the series was iconic because of Angela Lansbury. And when they were thinking about rebooting it with Octavia Spencer, who's a very, very good actress. Viola Davis was mentioned as well. Octavia Spencer is terrific. It was Octavia Spencer who said, I can't do this. I cannot be Angela Lansbury, and only Angela Lansbury can play this role. But when we considered the fact that we're about to reach a milestone with this series, I've got this one. This is number 48, Manuscript for Murder. Murder in Red comes out in May, number 49.
Oh, good.
We wanted to do the publisher. This was really their idea, but I can see it. They wanted to do something very, very special for the 50th book in the series, which coincidentally, I haven't figured this out for sure, but I think the 50th book in this series is going to be my 50th book too. Isn't that weird?
Oh, nice.
Or it might be my 49th, but I'm going to try to make it my 50th somehow. So for the 50th book in the series, we started brainstorming. And again, a conversation with Don Bain's grandson, Zach, really helped me in this regard. What has never been done on the series, either TV or books? We've never met Jessica as a younger woman, married to her husband, Frank, who's still alive, raising their nephew, Grady. Still, she's a substitute English teacher. She doesn't live in Cabot Cove yet. She's still associated with her college, where she was president of her sorority. I mean, all these things are mentioned at different various points of the book, but we never see her. In book number 50, which will be called A Time for Murder, remember that word, time, we're going to meet Jessica as 25 years in the past, before she published her first book, when she's investigating her very first murder. The first.
Oh, whoa.
And then 20 or 25 years later, at a retirement party being held in Cabot Cove, all those the survivors are back, and another murder happens. Why?
Oh, that is good.
So to understand why the murder in the present has been committed, you have to go back to the past. So what you're going to have is alternating chapters, approximately. I don't know exactly how it's going to work. But they will both be first person. They will both be narrated, obviously, by Jessica, not third person. We're going to stick with that. Mm. But you're going to meet Jessica when she's still thinking about being a writer, where she's written some short stories. But remember, it's the death of her husband that gets her to write a book called The Corpse Danced at Midnight. That's why she wrote it, because she's trying to find something to fill the time after Frank's death. She never wrote it to be published. Her nephew, Grady, at the time, this is the mythology of the television series. Her nephew, Grady, brings it to a publisher in New York that he's dating, and they buy it, and he doesn't even tell Jessica that he did it, his aunt, until publication day is almost upon us. So it's a surprise. So I'm kind of like taking that mythology and going to the next level. Because, again, I am not a static writer. It's not enough for me to just say, I'm just going to do what's already been done. I need to do more. I need to take any series I'm involved in, whether it's my own or somebody, in this case, I'm inheriting a brand. And it's a big, on that subject, you know, it's not just a brand. Jessica is the most iconic and recognizable American detective in history. There is no one else who even comes close. She has one Murder, She Wrote, and Jessica Fletcher have 100%, 99.9% brand recognition in this country. Everyone knows it. But it's not enough that just to leave it the way it is. I need to not reinvent it, never or redefine it, but just do something that hasn't been done before. And I do that in Manuscript for Murder in a variety of ways, but I really will be doing it a lot in, and that book will be out 1 year from yesterday. So we already know the pub date.
Nice.
So, you know, that's the great thing about this series. There's a book the first Tuesday of every December and the last Tuesday of every May. And I know that, you know, when I'm writing them. And you think creatively that you would be – that someone like me, you know, who flies by the seat of their pants and really – likes making stuff up as I go along, would have trouble taking over a brand like this. But I've had so much support from my publisher, Berkeley, letting me do it this way. They couldn't, you know, that this is the thing about publishing that people sometimes lose sight of. It is still a team effort. Yes, it's a big business, and yes, it is a little less personal than it used to be. But it's still a team effort. And if you have a supportive publisher that you work with not only to make a story better, but to conceive a story in the first place, I mean, this was all brainstorming. That's how A Time for Murder came to be. It was me pitching them something and them going, wow. And I can tell you also, A Time for Murder will be followed by my version. You mentioned And Then There Were None. My version of 10 Little Indians, where Jessica is stranded at Cabot Cove's Hill House, the hotel, in the middle of a killer Maine blizzard, with 12 other people who start being murdered one at a time.
Oh, that is so cool. I love books.
Meanwhile,
like that,
so now that's we just previewed three books that are coming next. And you know, instead of talking more about Manuscript for Murder, but that's okay because we broke some news today.
Before we end, in about 2 minutes, when is Caitlin coming back?
Caitlin comes back in April in Strong
Steel. Oh, good. So you'll let me know when you want to do anything in April.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I might never run out of ideas for Caitlin, but I think I'm going to run out of things I can put after Strong, because that's the tough thing with the brand of Caitlin Strong. Every title begins with Strong. So Strong as Steel.
I can come up with something.
Come up with something, because I got Strong as Steel, then I got Strong from the Heart, and then I got nothing. So I'm going to need your help.
That's why my nieces and nephews call me for term papers and ideas. And the other day it was my niece is going for nursing, and I'm very proud of her. Danny Nicole got another 100 on another nursing test this week, so she's doing great. And her friend needed me to go over her paper on ADHD, and this is like 10 o'clock at night. I said, you got to be kidding me. And I corrected the grammar. I didn't correct the content, and we've got to work on that with her. So that's why people ask me, can you think of this? I'm the homework helper. And it has to start with Strong, right? Strong.
Yes.
I'll come up with
I'm
you
sure,
get the
yeah.
I'll come up with the titles, but you have to come up with the plot.
I think I can do that. You know what would be a fun book? I can't really do it because it's two different publishers, but a crossover. Jessica and Caitlin together.
I was thinking about that. That was on my paper just now to ask you,
yes.
would they ever meet? And I would think that Caitlin, you know, went before she even started to become a ranger, and she started to become, you know, a writer. Maybe she'll meet Jessica Fletcher while she's going to school or something, Caitlin, when she's younger.
Maybe a cameo. Maybe it's more likely Jessica would come to Texas and meet Caitlin than Caitlin would come to New York and meet. I think it would have to be, but it would be fun. And you know, things like that get done on television all the time, where they have crossovers, where they take their, you know, their a couple series, Chicago Night on NBC or the superhero nights, you know, on the CW. I'd have to get both my publishers to agree, because remember, even though I own the copyright of Caitlin Strong, I don't own Jessica Fletcher at all. So Berkeley would have to be okay. It would probably have to be a Berkeley book as opposed to a Forge book. You know, so down the road, I think it would. So I'll tell you, I almost called you Jessica. We've broken a lot of news today, and let's see what your audience thinks about bringing Jessica and Caitlin into the same story.
Well, I'm going to put that on my Facebook wall and ask them what they think after I'm done with this. And the link is going to go live. So tell everybody where they could find out more about you. You had a third series, but we won't talk about Blake McCracken until you decide to bring him back. And, of course, you know who else I want you to bring back, but he's not coming back so fast either. You know that.
If you want to know more about Manuscript for Murder, I always tell people to Google it. I think if it's easy for me to send you places where you're going to read what I want you to read about it. I think you're better off reading objective opinions. Just Google Manuscript for Murder by John Land, reviews or by John Land, and you'll get a lot of information about it, and you'll see what people you'll see what other people like Fran, like you, Fran, are saying. And that way you get objective opinions, which is the best way to determine whether this is a book that's right for you if you've never read me or the Murder, She Wrote series before. And here's the great thing about this particular series. They're non-sequential. They can be read in any order.
Mm-hmm.
There is no one thing about Jessica I am keeping. She does not age. She is the same. She may have different issues as time goes on that are associated with getting a little older. She's still riding her bicycle. And by the way, she's taken up jogging again. And I forgot whether it's this book or the next one, but she used to jog, but then she stopped. And now she's jogging again because since her house kind of burned down in Manuscript for Murder, as you're going to see.
Yeah, I remember.
she moved into Hill House, the beautiful hotel
yep.
in town, and they have a gym in the basement. They have a gym. So she's gotten on the treadmill again in the winter because she can't ride her bike. Because, she was a very active woman in the TV series, and I really wanted to bring that back. And Angela Lansbury was, in her youth, she's 92 now, in her youth was a very athletic woman. So I want to do justice to Jessica Fletcher, not just mentally, but also physically.
Okay, well, we have to bring Seth back, too. But before we go, I want everybody to buy 97 copies of this series. And for Hanukkah, and if you want me to review your book, you better read this one first. I've got a stack inside of some very interesting books that are, a little bit more difficult. I did finish Head You Win by Jeffrey Archer. It's fantastic. I'm reading some that are quite different, that are memoirs. I read a self-help book in 500 pages yesterday, and I'm going, okay. And I wrote a review, and actually they thought it was fantastic. And I was glad because it was a 4-star book. It wasn't 5. You have to be honest. What can I say? But I hope that I get invited back down to the Thriller Fest. I'm looking forward to it again. And unfortunately, George Martin didn't want to come on my show. I felt bad. I did stand online for 45 minutes to get his autograph because my niece flipped out when she got the book with his autograph. So I was glad to do that. But and maybe someday he'll let me review one of his books. That would be nice too.
If he ever finishes another one. First, before you can review it, he actually has to finish it.
Yeah, well, he finished. There was something that he was talking about that day, and it was really weird because I went up to the guy and he said, "Oh, the publicist is not here." I said, "I think he's in the bathroom." I said, "No, I think you just came out." For some reason, he didn't know who I was, and I said, "Okay, well, what can I say? It would be really sad that he didn't get to review any of his books, but that's okay, because I've got like a stack. There's a stack on my chair of 25. Seriously, my chair's going to tip over." Plus, there's a whole bunch, whatever, and Ocean View Publishing, which is Matt Quayle and D.P. Lyle. D.P. Lyle's coming on May 21st. I have the book Sunshine State, and R.G. Belsky, his book is coming out on May 2nd, and we're doing an interview then because I've got the book before they do. How about that? But I will talk to you again on December 10th. We're going to talk about how do you pick the name of your character. How do you decide what your character is going to do, and a whole bunch more questions, and I'll send you a reminder. So thank you, John. I love talking to you. It's so much fun. Everybody, is the sun shining where you are? I hope.
It is. It's a beautiful day. It's unseasonably warm.
It's unseasonably cold here, but we don't care. The sun is out. Yesterday I got drenched. Everybody have a great day. It's beautiful outside, and bye. Mm-hmm.